From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. President Bush's former top aide, Karl Rove, gets a subpoena from the House Judiciary Committee. But will he actually talk? Barack Obama volunteers face racial incidents on the campaign trail, and a new leader of the NAACP steps up to the plate. For these topics and more, we've got Kevin Merida. He's an associate editor at The Washington Post and co-author of Supreme Discomfort, The Divided Soul of Clarence Thomas. Also with us, CNN analyst and radio host Roland Martin. He's also a special correspondent for Essence magazine. Great to have you guys on.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, Farai.
So the House Judiciary Committee has served former Bush aide Karl Rove with a subpoena. He's scheduled to appear on July 10th to testify on his alleged role as a key player in the dismissals of nine U.S. attorneys. Kevin, Karl Rove has been served before, so tell us more about what this is about and whether you think he's even going to say anything.
Well, the Bush administration has been, tried to block all efforts to have their top aides testify, citing that, private conversations, fall under the realm of executive privilege. And so, usually they're pretty successful. Administrations are pretty successful at that. I think that Karl Rove, for the Democrats, he's been, kind of the puppet master in their minds, the key figure behind a lot of the mischief in the Bush administration and things that they're trying to get at. John Conyers is known as a very aggressive House Judiciary Committee chairman on such things, and I know he will continue to force this issue, even if they don't get him to actually testify and say anything. The idea that the former top aide has been subpoenaed, and it I think they believe it helps them politically.
And this latest discussion is around whether or not Karl Rove spoke of essentially neutralizing an opponent, a political opponent, by dealing with charges against that person. Roland, how do you see this playing out in terms of the questions many citizens have about whether or not government is corrupt or whether there's unjust retribution for not being on one person's side or the other?
Well, this is a last gasp attempt by the Democrats to, frankly, get Karl Rove for a final time before President Bush leaves the White House in January 2009. And so we have had this swirling around. You have the allegations that Karl Rove was a mastermind behind the indictments against the former governor in Alabama. Of course, he's been let out of prison. The judge has even said there are some issues there with this prosecution. That's what this is about. We know that politically that the president has a prerogative to replace U.S. attorneys. But the real issue here is to what extent did politics play a role? And the problem is the administration initially said, oh, no, everything was above board. And then, of course, we found information that wasn't the case. That's what this is about. This is an effort to get Karl Rove. And so their deal is if they can get to him anyhow, we all forget Al Capone may have been a murderer, but they got him based upon tax evasion.
Kevin, when you look at this, has this ship pretty much sailed? The Bush administration is, if not marching out the door, at least sort of edging towards the door. This is what's called a lame duck phase of the presidency. Is it pretty much over at this point?
Well, yeah, it is pretty much over. A lot of the top aides that were in the White House, most of them have all gone, including Karl Rove. Karl Rove's out writing columns for Newsweek now. But I think that in the context of politics in this political year, I think the Democrats want to continue to remind the public of some of the abuses of the Bush administration. And this is part of this. Roland mentioned, this led to the resignation of Alberto Gonzalez, his attorney general, because Democrats put so much heat on the administration that finally they had to let Alberto Gonzalez go. And so the idea of influencing the judiciary is something that really most Americans would be upset about. And if they can tie that, the more they can remind people of these kind of allegations, I think they believe it helps them politically.
Let me stay with you, Kevin, talk about an article that you actually wrote. It was a very compelling article about racial incidents that some Obama volunteers experienced. Give us just one example.
One example was a woman who was a phone banker in northeastern Pennsylvania, did about 60 phone calls, and she told me that most of the calls were really depressing. A lot of racial invective on the calls. One caller, as she remembers, said, I'm not going to vote for Obama. Hang that darkie from a tree. There was a break-in at the Vincennes, Indiana campaign office of Obama, where a plate glass window was pushed in, American flag stolen, and a number of hate messages. Now, you know, people can argue whether it's racist or not, or these are racially based, but certainly bigotry, as they mentioned that, you know, Hamas supports Obama, and they used made references to Jeremiah Wright. There have been a number of volunteers who said that they were called, the N-word. White volunteers were called N-word lovers. So there was a pretty long dossier of this. Which is not to say that this is the prevalent experience or the dominant experience of Obama volunteers, but it is something that I think has been kind of under the radar and not been brought to light very much.
Roland,
this is a very important story, and mm-hmm. I think when I've heard conservative commentators and talk show hosts sort of dismiss this as, well, look, there are people like this, but it's not the majority of people. That is absolutely correct. But I think we got to keep in mind that is, this could be very well a tight election. We saw it in 2000, we saw it in 2004, and when you look at voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, when you had 10, 12, 15, 16, 20% of the voters in a Democratic primary say that race was the number one factor in how they decided to vote, that could make a difference. When you have a state where 2, 3, 4, 5 million people vote, okay, in a Democratic primary, let's just say it's 4 million people. And let's say just 10% of the people say the race of the candidate was the number one factor. That is 200,000 votes. And so there were a number of states that Bush won, I think it was like 10 states, by less than 200,000 votes. And so I think people should not dismiss this as, well, you know, that's fine. No, if people sit here and say that we should have one America and we should not be calling ourselves African-American, Irish-American, whatever the case may be, then we should be examining the racial attitudes that persist, because that is a significant problem, even at 10 or 20%.
Quickly, both of you, Kevin first, do you think the Obama campaign would rather keep these things on the hush because it undermines this idea that a black man is electable?
Well, I think there's no question about that. I got several calls in advance of the story's publication with concerns about it and wanted to make sure it was put in proper context, et cetera. I think that, you know, Obama campaign has gone through the past several months where there's been a very much the race of the candidate has been brought to light, and there's been a racial focus because of the remarks of Jeremiah Wright, and they've been dealing with that. And I think that they don't want it to be become the focus of his campaign. So they did not even want the incident in Vincennes, Indiana, reported. In fact, they told the volunteer there to just clean up the hate messages and not to make a big thing of it.
Roland, just quickly on this, because I want to get your feedback on the NAACP as well.
Sure. Bottom line on this particular topic, the Obama campaign, sure, they don't want the focus to be on this. In fact, Obama has said repeatedly that if he is not elected, it won't be because of his race, it will be because the American people did not buy into his policies and positions. They want the focus to be on his particular points and not his race, but the bottom line is going to be there. Hillary Clinton had to deal with the issue of sexism on the campaign trail. We have to accept the reality that race is there, and people should be fighting against it versus by saying it's really no big deal.
I want to move on. We just have a couple minutes left for the NAACP question. 35-year-old Benjamin Jealous was elected last Saturday by a vote of 34 to 21. Now, Roland, the NAACP was without a leader for over a year. Do you think that this was a controversial? It was a split vote, but is it a controversial selection?
Well, it was controversial in the sense that, according to my sources on the board, Reverend Frederick Haynes out of Dallas, Friendship West Baptist Church, was the first choice of the search committee. That Jealous was the only finalist who went before the board. The board met for 8 hours, did not vote on this until almost 3 o'clock in the morning. People wanted all three finalists. Alvin Brown, former Clinton official, was also one of the finalists. But my sources say that Julian Bond, the board chairman, really pushed for Jealous to only be the only one. And so you had some issues there. I mean, obviously, a 34-21 vote, I mean, look, you will want a unanimous selection or even a much broader one than that. It does say that some people are unsettled with Jealous because he served in various capacities, different places for 3 years at a time. Bottom line is they need consistency. They need leadership.
All right.
That's the issue.
All right, Kevin, really quickly. Can the NAACP...
Well, I had lunch.
Please.
I was going to say I had lunch with Ben Jealous, ironically, right before Super Tuesday, and he was very much involved in voter mobilization with a group called Power PAC that's based in mobilizing black voters based in San Francisco, and they mobilize voters across the South and support Obama. So he comes from an activist political background, and that I think some people see as a refreshing change.
All right. Well, Kevin and Roland, always great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Kevin Merida is an associate editor of The Washington Post and co-author of Supreme Discomfort, The Divided Soul of Clarence Thomas. He joined me from the studios at The Washington Post. And Roland Martin is a CNN analyst and host of The Roland S. Martin Show on WVON AM in Chicago.